And then we can move on to the disclosure initiative subsidiaries that are SMEs. I give the floor to Elizabeth.
Thank you, Hans. Good morning, good afternoon. Today we're seeking your views on several matters that are grouped into three papers. So I'll start with the first paper, AP31A. Paper AP31A sets out a number of exceptions to the principle that we're going to start with the disclosure requirements in the IFRS for SMEs standard and adapt them if there is a recognition and measurement difference between that standard and IFRS standard and BC157 supports that adaptation. We divided the exceptions into four categories in the paper. The last of those discusses disclosure objectives that are in other standards, such as IFRS 15. We believe that if we incorporate the disclosure objectives that are in other standards into the reduced disclosure standard, a subsidiary that's an SME will not be able to give any less disclosure than a subsidiary that's not applying the reduced disclosure standard. And this is because we feel if we include the disclosure objective, a subsidiary having given whichever material disclosures are required by that reduced disclosure standard for its own circumstances, if it then needs to go back and assess that disclosure objective, has it given everything? We can't see that it could give any less than another subsidiary not applying that. And that we see is running counter to our project objective. So that's actually question eight. That's the last section, section five. Of all the other exceptions, if you agree with the staff recommendation, the first one on IFRS 12 and some of them in section three will reduce disclosure requirements. The others will add disclosure requirements. So there are eight questions in the paper, as I just mentioned. I'd like to leave question eight on disclosure objectives to the end. But I suspect it might be slightly more efficient if we have a general discussion on all of the other topics together, and then we can vote on each of the questions 1 to 7, then come back and discuss and vote on disclosure objectives. So I'll stop here, take your comments on the items in sections 2, 3, and 4.
Anne?
Thanks, Hans. Thanks, Elizabeth, for the paper and all your work in the detail here. You've had a lot to process. You've asked now for overarching comments. So I don't agree with a lot of the add disclosures. And the reason, this is mainly to do with items where people have given you feedback looking at newer standards that have not been considered for the IFRS for SMEs. And I think we have to stay with our objective, which was reducing disclosure for the subsidiary that was SMEs, allowing them to use the IFRS for SMEs standard as it stands now, and following your logic of recognition and measurement differences. These ones we're looking at today are not coming out of recognition and measurement differences. They're coming out of people's ideas of improving IFRS for SMEs. So to me, they belong in the review of IFRS for SMEs. So bottom line is, I think that these improvements belong in the review of IFRS for SMEs. Once they're in there, then they circle back and go into IFRS XX. If we don't do it that way, we create a halfway house, this other standard, that is a bit of this and a bit of that. Thank you.
Mary?
I think good job organizing a disparate set of information points and questions. I think I'm in a different place overall, and I'm commenting overall rather than on specific suggestions. I'm in a different place from Anne, not diametrically opposed, but just, you know, along the spectrum, because I think that we have the right criteria for going through the whole body of our standards and the IFRS for SME and filtering out what the board has to consider more carefully. And I think then we should apply our judgment rather than being handcuffed by the screening criteria that we've developed. And so I think, while I don't agree with every recommendation in the paper about, you know, what to keep, what to throw, I think I support the way you've approached it of saying, okay, let's bubble these things out and then think about it, and don't say, well, don't, and you did not say, and I would have been concerned about this if you had, well, we think it should be X, but because applying our criteria gives us Y, we are proposing Y, you know, or Z. Yeah, I think you've been good about saying, here are the other things to think about, and here's what staff recommends we should go forward with. As I said, there are a couple things where I might fall on a different side, you know, of a closely judged recommendation, but I think it's the right way to approach it, and I wouldn't want to be more rigid than we have been, especially when we're in the phase of developing the very first exposure draft. And I think we're going to need in the exposure draft to be able to go out and talk particularly to users, you know, people who are or represent or work with users of SME financial statements, to highlight what is in, what is out, and make sure we understand the implications, because it's not just about, you may, you know, here's how you get less disclosure. It's get less disclosure, but still provide something that satisfies the user needs, you know, for the set of financial statements. So, Elizabeth, I was going to stop there unless you want comments on specific recommendations in the series of papers.
I will definitely take the vote one by one, but even some of the votes are on several. It might make more sense to give your specific comments now and hear, okay, so we can hear everyone. Okay. Just like everyone's got specific comments, each on different bits.
Okay. The one that I had then the most concern about was the set of recommendations around investment entities and investment entity disclosures, because we're trying, you know, the idea of trying to build disclosure requirements for entities that are subject to the IE exceptions, and they're exceptions, not elections, you know, in IFRS 10. To building them around the disclosure requirements that are written without, you know, for recognition and measurement standards in the IFRS requirements in the IFRS for SMEs that do not have that IE exception, it feels like a maybe not so good framework. And when I look at some of the things, I start questioning, frankly, whether we should have a discussion about whether an entity that is an IE can use the reduced disclosure framework, whether we just say, because it's a specific set of issues, should we at least think about that as another question? Because if we find that we're going to do lots of modifications and it's hard to think about the user information needs in the setting when you're told not to consolidate for a specific reason, and when we know, including from our PIR, that it's an area that has raised some accounting questions, I just wonder if we should think about carving that off, at least in the initial step. So that, I think, is my big comment on the specifics.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Bruce?
Thanks very much, Hans. And just by way of commenting, I mean, I agree with what everybody said to a degree. I mean, I'm very supportive of this project. I think there is a need for it. Just getting to some of the specifics, and I do appreciate I've fed some of these to some of the staff, but just for the sake of the rest of the board who are there. A couple of the initial comments I had, the first one was just around I-7, where we're talking about the new liability reconciliation, and the proposal we had made in the paper was that we had to do this by reconciliation. The comment I had made on this was that I don't necessarily want to box people in to having to do reconciliation. The reason for that was if you were part of a group where you were reporting up and your holding company had chosen not to do this disclosure by reconciliation, but was doing it by other with some other format, then you as a subsidiary using the standard would have a more onerous requirement than you would have in your group reporting. So it was just saying, I think that we should still say, we could say, for example, a reconciliation is preferred or easier if that's what we want. But I think the idea was rather to say that actually you still had that choice if you wanted to do it in another way. Same wording almost as what we had in IS7. Just on some of the other comments that I'd had, so I'm just scrolling down as we get through them, mostly on some of the specifics in the disclosures. One of them was just on IFRS 15. It was on page 27, for those of you paging through, 27, 28. Just where we were talking then in 119, where we were saying the disclosures that we would put in, we had said that we would put in B, D, and E of paragraphs 119, but we'd excluded A and C. My view was I think that we should leave A and C in the disclosures. The reason for that was I know we're trying to say that these aren't really focusing on the future cash flows. In my mind, these were, and I think the best description of that was I've always seen these five disclosures being put in I like to always describe it as the way we're telling a story. It helps people understand how we're recognizing, what are the performance obligations, how we're satisfying those, and I think those tie in to me, to everything that will be the cash flows that we're going to receive. So I would have left all five of those in. I just think you leave the first two out. I think in isolation, the other three don't really give the information that we would want. And then the other specific one, just to finish that off, just on the pensions. So where we spoke about the termination and the other long-term benefits, I know there's been a bit of debate around this. I still feel that those two, and those are on pages 33 and 34 in the paper, those to me were more onerous than they would have been under if I was using full IFRS. And I just think as a principle, anywhere where an entity using this subsidiary standard would be required to do some disclosures that they would not be required to do were they using full IFRS, that to me can't be the right answer where we're trying to reduce the disclosures. So, I do appreciate that, yes, there was a discussion at the time with the SMEs, and I looked at the board paper that Elizabeth sent to me, and I see some people don't believe it is, but I just think having looked at the standard again, I still think it. If I was applying IS 19 and I was applying this, I still think that I'd have to end up doing more disclosure under this. And I just don't think we should be having any situation where we put in more disclosure. I think those are my major comments that I want to feed in.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Sue?
Thanks, Hans. I think firstly, sort of overarching comments and then a couple of specifics. I think where I am is pretty close to what Mary articulated, and I haven't even had a discussion with her on this. And we're not even in the building together anymore, so that's spooky. But I would agree that the analysis that the staff have done, which you should really be commended for, because you've just done so much work behind the scenes on this to do the analysis and the compare and contrast, really sort of highlighted for me in a way that I couldn't sort of visualize without the specifics, where some of the limitations are of the basic approach that we've agreed to. Now, I would agree with Anne that I think at a minimum we need to be really cautious where there is consistent recognition and measurement to then pick up bits and pieces out of the full IFRS book that go beyond IFRS for SMEs, otherwise we sort of start to undermine the basic design that we've got. But I think Mary said that that should be our sort of starting point, but then we shouldn't be handcuffed. We should be able to use judgment. And I think some of the situations here show where some of that judgment becomes important. And the specific example that, and you might remember, the staff I'm sure remembers, that I was always a little bit more wary about whether this same recognition and measurement was a sort of strong enough base for this analysis to start with. So. And I think some of the nuance came through in the detail. And the one that struck me, because it was one of the ones that I looked at in detail, was the IFRS 16 analysis. So there is a starting point. It was the case before that there were finance leases for lessees, and so there was a disclosure regime that went with that, in the SME document. And there is, you know, basically all finance lease accounting for lessees now in the full book. So you could say that there's a consistent recognition and measurement. But when we worked on IFRS 16, we did a lot of extra work working out what it is that investors wanted to understand about leases. And I think one of the key things that came from that was, for example, the importance of being able to compare your interest expense in P&L and the liability that you have in the balance sheet. And to do that properly, we need to pick up at least a few bits of IFRS 16, the new disclosures, the interest expense in particular, which you've captured in this document. And so I certainly am not saying we need to sort of look at every new IFRS 16 disclosure that's been introduced, but I think there's situations where a piece of information is so important and was so fundamental to the board when we were looking at user needs for the lease accounting that it's a special case that should be given consideration. And I think that for me is a good example of when we need at least a level of judgment that's sort of an overlay to the main criteria we're using, which is there a recognition and measurement difference? But I think that sort of more nuanced approach is appropriate. I had a similar reaction to Mary on investment entities in the sense that I wasn't fully convinced with the argument that we wouldn't want investment entities that are subsidiaries that are SMEs to provide additional disclosure that non-investment entities weren't making, because the whole point is this was a special set of disclosures because they are investment entities and so they aren't consolidating. They've got things at fair value that other subsidiaries that are SMEs wouldn't have. Sorry, and there was one other point that I wanted to make actually on the leasing one. Obviously, our starting position is to try and make sure that this is a regime which is more efficient and attractive for entities who are rolling their disclosures up into a consolidation package for a group that's applying IFRS as a whole. That's sort of one of our main sort of anchors for the design of the project. I think if we have situations, for example, where you had a subsidiary that had a lot of leases, let's use that as an example, they would be needing to get that information for the consolidated financials anyway. So I'm not sure that there's a lot of extra burden in having at least a few of these disclosures picked up being required for this population, because if it was material to the group, they'd need to be capturing that anyway for the consolidation package. And so I think maybe that little nuance is something we should keep in mind as well. Thank you.
Okay, Tom?
Yeah, I'd like to come back to Anne's initial comment. I'm quite worried about this. And I'll ask just a couple of questions. So all these new ones are going to, when we do the IFRS for SMEs review, all these will come up. Is that correct, Elizabeth?
I guess in part it depends where the book gets to on the recognition and measurement. But yes, they're in standards that is within the, with the exception of IFRS 17, which we're not dealing with in this paper anyway, we're bringing next month. All of these are in standards that are within the scope of the second comprehensive review, but it depends, you know, if, for example, you decided not to align certain recognition and measurements, then I would have thought, I don't know, because I'm not working on that project, but I would have thought, you then wouldn't look to align the disclosures. You might still look to maybe add some improvements to disclosures based on your experience. But yes, potentially they are.
Okay, so I guess this is my big concern, is that the criteria we're applying when they come ad hoc piecemeal from the board, will they be the same criteria as when we do the full IFRS for SMEs review? The basic philosophy underlying the IFRS for SMEs is that disclosures are costly and you take a hard look at all of them and you only keep the absolutely necessary ones. And when I look at these, I'm very much afraid that we will pass them thinking these are substantive and necessary. But when we then talk to our stakeholders down the road, the stakeholders will say, no, these are not substantive and necessary. And then so we then I will have some of these things floating there, and I'll ask my next question. If we do put some in, and then at the next review, the people say, you should not have put these in, or we don't want them in the IFRS for SMEs standard, do we then pull them out, or do we just leave them in and let them build up over time?
A And again, I think to answer that, I think that's the question that we need to put to the board when that arises, because we're only now trying to develop the very first standard, and we're basing it on the SME standard as it currently is. That is one question that then the board would need to decide if disclosures have gone in the reduced disclosure before being considered for the SME standard and subsequently don't go in the SME standard, would the board want to take them out, or at least want a conversation as to whether it wants to take them out, I would have thought. But I can't say for definite they'll definitely come out, because I feel that's not a question you've yet debated. I think I would recommend it came out, but it would be a recommendation and it would be for you to discuss.
So if I come back to what Anne said, if as I fear, the criteria we're going to apply are not going to be as severe as the review, and that I would feel more comfortable if everybody was convinced. For example, if everybody who believes that they're obviously going to go in, we could be making that decision now if it was so obvious, but it isn't, and it would violate our process, so we couldn't do it anyway. But so anyway, I'm concerned about that. And if at the end we put these things in and then we don't take them out, we will have over time created essentially a completely third set of disclosures that will slowly build up over time. I think that's why the principle that Anne sort of cited is so important, is we start with the SMEs because that tells us what the right set of disclosures are for the reduced set. I just am really uncomfortable that we're applying the same criteria we would be doing at the same, on the date we do an IFRS for SMEs. So I would prefer that if we do this at all, it's only after we've really got some very good guidance about applying the right hurdle that is essentially the same hurdle that would be applied when you did an IFRS for SMEs review. I'm not convinced that we're applying that hurdle.
We are applying BC157,
But I would say that many, many, many disclosures could be justified using 157 that have previously been rejected. So it's 157 plus this overriding view that disclosures are costly and we need to exercise care in adding disclosures. So it's not just 157 alone. So anyway, that's my big concern. And I wouldn't mind somebody explaining whether we're actually applying the same rigorous criteria we'd be applying if we are going to pass these things.
Okay, Jin Chao.
Thank you, Hans. Regarding to the overarching approach, I also agree with staff's proposal. I think that the basic approach we decided is right, but it's ideally we should apply all the requirements based on the basic approach. And this is the board has decided, but we decided before we review all the reduced disclosure proposal. So after reviewed all the disclosure proposal, I realized that some situation, if we follow that basic approach, some useful information maybe we're missing. So I think final objective, still how can we meet the user's needs? And that means one way we reduce disclosure requirement, reduce the burden for the SMEs, for those subsidiary SMEs. In another way, we will not lose some significant information to the users. So I think it's good to revisit those reduced disclosure and whether, so this is so-called exception to the basic approach. Of course, I agree with that we should try to make those exception as narrow as possible. But in some cases, if those information are really useful to users, I think we can create some exception to the basic approach in order to meet the user's needs. I think this is also the model was used in other standards, when we develop some general principles, sometimes we also develop some exception or exemption to the general principles. So this is a general idea. I agree with, generally agree with the staff's proposal. Secondly, with regard to those specific disclosures, I have also a little bit of concern about investment entities issue, because we decided that not to introduce those additional disclosure specifically to those investment entities when those investment entities has, you know, have unconsolidated structured entities. I feel that those disclosure requirement developed specifically for those investment entity, if they don't, you know, they don't, you know, consolidate those structured entities. So it's, the situation is different because we use the reason to keep or to maintain the consistency with those other entities, which they consolidate those unsolidated, unstructured entities. I think the situation is different. If those entities, they have been consolidated, so those information may be, have been reflected in the consolidated financial statement. But for investment entities, because they do not consolidate those subsidiaries, so I think those additional information is still very useful for users. So this for this point, I think we should think about maybe to introduce those additional disclosure requirements has already included in IFRS 12. Thank you.
Tadeo.
Thank you, Hans. First, to congratulate the project team, because I think that they have been doing very good work. This project, I think that's like a project with many other projects inside. Every piece of this is like a different one. And then as we are discussing about investment entities, lease, I mean that every single topic in the end of the day is like a small project. And then therefore, thank you very much for putting all this together for our analysis. I try to build on the comments from Anne and Ton. We all know that IFRS for SME disclosures is the starting point for this project. And I think I agree that we should try to stick as much as possible to what we have in IFRS for SME. But the point is that this is an IFRS standard, not IFRS for SME standard. It is within the IFRS standards. And we haven't yet, for example, discussed it, whether we will need, and probably we will need to update this standard every time that we have a new IFRS standard or an amended IFRS standard, we will need to review it. What I'm trying to say that in a point in time, we will need to be ahead of the IFRS for SME, and of course it will not have exactly the same disclosure because we are ahead of IFRS for SME. Not necessarily mean that what we have decided for this standard is what is going to prevail in IFRS for SME, because IFRS for SME will have its own assessment. Looking from the principle, we are looking at the BC 157 to make a decision in relation to the disclosure that we have to include. I have been listening to some of the comments, and I agree with that we may need to do some adjustments, but I think that the project team is landing in the right direction. It's not necessarily an exception in relation to IFRS for SME, but it's just because the timing is slightly different and may be indicative that we may need to make some change in IFRS for SME in certain aspects. That's the point I fully agree with Anne and Ton, that you have to be very careful and think thoroughly whether if I am at this point in time making a review of the IFRS for SME, would I add this to the disclosures? I think that this is an important question, but we still have a different disclosure requirements, because it is in between IFRS for SME and IFRS full because of the recognition measurement differences. And then therefore we should have something, it's not exactly a third set of standards, it is within IFRS standard, but we have to have this logic behind when we are developing and working with the disclosure requirement for these standards. Thank you.
Okay, Rika.
Thank you, Hans. I think listening to other board members' views, and I consider that maybe I'm very close to Jin Chao and Tadu. I think the companies we are targeting for this reduced disclosure standard non-public SMEs, and they would be able, theoretically, they would be able to use IFRS for SME. But there is some reason they have, they would not be able to use IFRS SMEs, maybe because of the cost issues, or maybe because of jurisdictional rules. So I think we need to consider the benefit of reduced disclosure should be equivalent to the benefit that IFRS for SME. But at the same time, we need to consider the timing difference of the cycle of updating the standards to amend for IFRS SME and IFRS themselves. So I think as long as we can apply the same approach to the similar type of the gap between the full IFRS and IFRS for SME, I think for the benefit of the users and the stakeholders of the reduced standards, we should be considered how we can adapt those new standards or amendment. So I think, but at the same time, basis of making an exception from the originally we agree should be clear, because those judgment will affect the company's decision when they use the reduced disclosure standard and what extent of the information should be included in their financial statement. So I think, so that is a point I would like to make.
Right, Martin, please.
Yes, thanks, Hans. Man, I wanted to support what Anne and Tom has said, because when I thought we started this project to reduce costs for preparers, it was not to enhance and improve information for users or financial statements for SMEs. And if we're doing that, that is what we are doing. And my concern is that we're ending up with a kind of third standard. We have the IFRS for SMEs, which then is sufficient for users. We have then this standard, which is even better than for users, because we have enhanced information, and then we have full IFRS. And I think that was not the objective of this kind of project. I think it was mainly about reducing costs, costs for SMEs, which are subsidiaries. And then we have developed our guidance and said, okay, there is measurement and recognition differences. And for that, I think we have maybe to include or add some disclosure, but not more. And if we divide from this kind of principle, we're creating a kind of third standard, which I think was not so objective of this project. And it is clearly, man, it's always good to improve information and enhance what users need. But this was not the objective of this project. And if this should be the objective, we should do that in a different project, which is a full review of IFRS for SMEs, but not here. Otherwise, I think we are confusing things. And I think then, if we're doing it here, I think we then in the other project, when we review the IFRS for SMEs, people will say, but we have already decided in this project, but in this project, we don't do an overall look at what are the appropriate disclosure for SMEs. That is a different kind of scope and objective what we are doing here. And therefore, I totally agree what Anne and Tom have said, and we should stick to the overall objective and principle. How are we doing in adding disclosure to this kind of project, but which is for SMEs, which are subsidiaries, and not improving disclosures for SMEs. Thanks.
Nick?
Thanks, Hans. I mean, just listening to the discussion, I can see that there are possibly three reasons why we'd have differences between what we're working on here, proposals for subsidiaries that are SMEs and I4S for SMEs. One is, as Tadil outlined, simply timing differences. And I believe we're going to come on to discuss that later, but I think those are just matter of fact that the comprehensive review of the standard for SMEs only happens on a periodic basis. You know, there'll be new developments in the interim phase. The second clearly relates to measurement and recognition issues. And the third, which I'm not sure that we have fully explored, is if there's any need differences in the needs between the users of I4S for SMEs and the users of subsidiary accounts. If anything, you could argue that often that those using subsidiary accounts will also look to the parent for assurance over security of lending. And so perhaps there's a lesser need there. So I think, but my feeling is our discussion this morning, much of this comes around to timing differences between where we are in these two projects. In terms of areas of details, just to pick up on a couple of things, Bruce referred to the proposed IAS 19 disclosures around termination benefits and other long-term benefits on pages 33 and 34. Now, I agree with Bruce on this. It seems odd that these are more onerous and full IFRS. Neither of these issues were flagged in the work that we recently undertook as part of the targeted standards level review of disclosures on IAS 19. So I'm not sure why we would ask for these from subsidiaries. And then on the 2016 amendment to IAS 7 in terms of liabilities and financing activities, the most effective way of providing this disclosure is through a reconciliation. The only reason in IAS 7 why we didn't mandate that was to provide a point of exit for financial entities such as insurers and banks, where clearly there's a question over the use of the financial statement, full stop. Now, given that IMS SMEs for subsidiaries regime wouldn't apply to financial entities, I'm of the mind that we should ask for a reconciliation as being the most effective way of providing this information. Thank you.
Françoise.
Yes, thank you, Hans. Very lively debate. First of all, I would like to join in all the positive comments that have been made about the analysis and the extent of work that has been done here, because it's really a lot and very impressive. Now, the second point I would like to make is that I think I said that already in one of our last meetings. I think we are not solely reducing costs, because we would not want a standard to have the IFRS brand on it if we were considering cost and not benefits. So here we have the benefit of having all the work done on the IFRS for SMEs that has at the time considered the specific needs of users of financial statements in SMEs. And we acknowledge that we have a population of SMEs that have to apply IFRS recognition measurement that cannot apply the IFRS for SMEs. And what we do is that, based on the analysis that was done at the time of the IFRS for SMEs, and because we want to help these people achieve the best cost benefit outcome, and we want to channel them better into applying materiality principle. Materiality, I would want to remind everybody, is directly linked to users' needs. So we are bringing that into IFRS, the possibility. I'm an SME. I have, for one or the other reason, and here it's because they are a subsidiary to a group, it makes sense for them to keep recognition measurement of IFRS for their accounts. We're helping them achieve the good application of materiality, the right cost-benefit trade-off in terms of disclosures. So we are not under, I mean, to me, it would be wrong if we were diminishing the quality of the financial statements of those entities that, if we go up to the end, will be in conformity with IFRS. And so to me, that's the main point I wanted to make to start with. The second I would like to make is that if we go ahead with this, it is inevitable that once IFRS recognition and measurement develop new standards, amendments that lead to revising disclosures also, it is inevitable that this standard will be updated in terms of disclosures before the IFRS, before we consider whether the IFRS for SMEs should be aligned with the changes that we've made. So it is inevitable. I mean, it's not a choice. If we do that, we have no other choice than considering changes, what the changes in recognition measurement mean in terms of disclosures. And in terms of timing, second, next step is you consider in a comprehensive review of the IFRS policies whether to align or not align, whether to align but with a number of simplifications. And once you have done that, you may end up with, if you align, the reduced set of disclosures that you've had in this standard can apply to the IFRS for SMEs, you can use that. But if you have decided not to align, or if you align with significant simplifications, you may have end up with the disclosures for the IFRS for SME standard, which is different. Because basically, you keep a link, and BC 157 keeps a strong link between recognition measurement and disclosures. So that's for two first main comments. The third comment is that I don't believe in this story of there is a third standard, and we should absolutely avoid that, because we have IFRS and it's suited for in terms of disclosures to two distinct groups of entities, those that seek finance on the public markets and those which don't. And we know that users' needs are different. So within IFRS, we adopt disclosures to specific users' needs. That's one standard. And we have the IFRS for SMEs that we want to keep simple and therefore not necessarily align in principle, the framework, the same economic reasonings, but keep simple. So having said that, I would like to mention that in detail, I'm happy to use the staff recommendation as a basis for consultation. I think it has the merit of having been really carefully considered. It comes with justifications. I may have my variance here and there on this detail or that other detail, but I think what we have here is a very good basis for consultation, so I will approve of it. Hans didn't like what I said, I guess.
Don't think you should take it personally. Mary?
Yeah, just coming back on a few things, and very interesting discussion for me because it's some others' comments have highlighted some aspects that I think I want to articulate as learnings for this process. One is to pull out the point, one of the considerations Bruce cited when he was looking at the merits of a particular disclosure item, I think it was an IS-19 one, which is one of the things I think we should think about in terms of the cost of a disclosure when we're looking at a specific one and cost benefit is whether the subsidiary that is an SME would have to generate that information anyway because it's parents' consolidated financial statements. And that's a way in which a sub that is an SME is different from somebody applying the SME standard. Because when we're, Elizabeth, I agree with the approach the staff has taken in terms of using BC, 157, for those that we have not considered yet for the SME standard. And I hear Tom's caution about are we erring too much on the side of caution if we haven't gone through it for the SME standard. But an important learning for me is when we are looking at it from an SME perspective, we're considering not just the BC 157, but it's also thinking about the cost of requiring somebody to generate this information for the first time, as opposed to in a sub that is an SME, if it's an existing IFRS standards disclosure requirement, you presume that they're going to have to generate it anyway for their group consolidated financial statements. So there may be some cost difference. The second thing is that when we are looking at IFRS for SME disclosure requirements, I think there are times when we have hesitated to impose specific disclosure requirements that may be in the related IFRS standard, because we have deliberately made the IFRS for SMEs less specific about how you do certain recognition and measurement items. And I'm not saying there are recognition and measurement differences, but what I'm saying is we expect with the IFRS for SMEs that there could be more diversity in practice because we are not as specific in that standard as we are in the related IFRS standard. And then we want to avoid introducing via the back door, you must apply this higher level description of recognition and measurement standards that's in the IFRS for SMEs in a particular way because of the disclosure requirement we write. So I think that's a reason why in the context of only the IFRS for SMEs, we might make disclosure decisions that don't automatically read across to the disclosure requirements for subsidiaries that are SMEs. Now, that mini revelation doesn't fundamentally change any of my conclusions or views on the specifics. But going back to something that Francoise said in terms of the consultation, especially this being the initial consultation, I mean, I feel I know IFRS standards pretty well. And I absolutely needed all your work and all your organizing to be able to hone in on some specific issues. And so I think anytime we go out for a consultation, if we have something we can put in front of people, we get better feedback than if we decide to omit it and see if they raise it. That's just a generic lesson about consultation. So I think for some of these things that are the more contentious decisions, on the end, whether we end up saying include them or exclude them, I think we should include them in our consultation. So if we decide to keep them in as a proposed disclosure, maybe we find a way of highlighting, whether it's gray shading or something else, that these are ones that were on the margin. On the other hand, if we decide to omit them, i.e. not propose that they be required, I think there are several that it would be worth saying, we decided on balance not to propose this, but here's one that we thought hard about. I don't know what the more formal language is, because I think that we need to put something in front of people to get them to react to it, rather than the generic question of, is there anything else in the full IFRS standard disclosure requirements that you think would be relevant. It's just too much to throw at people as an abstract question. I also wanted to offer some caution about reacting too strongly to something that on an initial screen seems to be the SME standard is more onerous than the related IFRS standard. And I think the staff has given a couple of examples of this in your detailed analysis, because what happens is when we dig into it, it turns out that the SME standard might have a specific disclosure requirement because it's an alternative to a much more extensive disclosure requirement. Let's say the SME standard requires two specific things, while the IFRS requires a reconciliation that would include those two specific things and six others. So on its face, it may look like the SME standard has more when you compare one, very narrowly, one versus the other, but actually it's the trade-off that we had. And so I think we have to recognize when that's happening, try to flesh out when that's happening, and then say, do we keep that trade-off? Or is this the time, you know, if the SME standard hasn't caught up, as you've identified in a couple of times, with changes that we've made to the full IFRS standard, is this the time when, you know, when we front run a decision we might take in the SME standard? So those are all process things. Can I just throw in a couple of specific comments or comments about specific issues? Paper 31A, page 24, item 19F, I think the staff is recommending that we not include it, but that's the terms of any contractual agreements that would require the entity or its unconsolidated subsidiaries to provide financial support. To me, that seems exactly the kind of thing that users of SME financial statements would be interested in, so I wasn't sure why we were proposing not carrying that forward. On page 31, the disclosure about JVs in item 2 at the top of page 31. Again, that seems of high interest to users. And then on the IS-19 proposals, you're cleverly asking us to vote on dropping something before you ask us to vote on whether the modification, I think, comes in a separate category. I'm okay with the dropping as long as we pick up the modification that you're proposing about one disclosure. So those were three specific things, but I wanted to come back.
Mary, sorry, missed the last. What was your last one on?
On IS-19 one. Employee benefits. Oh, I'll send you a note offline about. So anyway, I think we're learning a lot through this process. We should pull those points out and think about including them in the consultation so that when people are giving us feedback, they can think about things like, does the sub have to generate this anyway because it's a consolidation, you know, it's a requirement for the parents consolidated versus, you know, versus an SME and the front running, et cetera. And I think we should try and find a way to highlight these marginal ones, whether they end up in or out of our initial proposal, so that we give people specifics to respond to rather than a generic question.
Okay, Tom, you wanted to get back in?
Yeah, just a couple of quick comments just on what Mary said. First of all, I agree with her about trade-off. I did this exercise once in Canada, and sometimes that's exactly what you do, is you put in something to substitute for a much more onerous set. And it would be really good to identify those. The second one is, Mary, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I caught that she noted that because subsidiaries that are SMEs may have the information because they're preparing the information because the parent will want to consolidate. And therefore, the logic is that the cost-benefit trade-off is different for the subsidiaries that are SMEs than regular SMEs because they already have the information. That is a reasonable thing to say, and it's a reasonable criterion. It's one, though, that wouldn't just apply here. If we accept that criterion, you could go back and look at all the disclosures that are currently not in the IFRS for SMEs where that would be true. There are probably several of them where the subsidiary has the information and the cost-benefit trade-off would be different. And it seems to me that if we are going to invoke that, that should have been back when we had the discussion about the criteria we were going to use. We chose regulation and measurement. We could have added and still could add, and cases where the cost-benefit trade-off is radically different and it's low cost for subsidiaries. But we didn't do that. And I really, again, come back to, I'd like to sort out what are major overriding principles from sort of adding items on an ad hoc basis.
Hans, can I just jump in on this comment of Tom's?
Yes.
Briefly. Tom, yeah. But the point that I was making is married to the second one of an entity applying the IFRS for SME may have a much broader range of recognition and measurement practices that don't generate that information. I think it's what I was saying is not an absolute determinative rule, but an additional factor to consider.
Yeah, and I that's what I'm saying. I think it's a legitimate additional factor. I'm just saying I think it could have been applied to the original missing disclosures.
Rika.
Thank you, Hans. I just want to give some cautions about considering too much about the merit of preparation of consolidation package, because the parent company's materiality judgment is applied when they ask the consolidation package to each individual subsidiary. So I think what I've seen in the past is that not all subsidiary prepare full information for their parent consolidation package in terms of the disclosure. They only prepare one or two sometimes, depending on the size of the company and due to the parent company's materiality judgment. So we need to really be cautious about that point.
Okay. Françoise?
Yes, thank you. I asked for the floor to say what Rika just said. At the outset of this project, we were discussing why it was needed, and it was needed because basically materiality could not apply to the subsidiaries as it did for the group. And that's why we need this this project here. I think if we would not be on the right track if we were systematically thinking, well, they may have it in their consolidation package, so for them they could provide it. I think that would be the wrong path. The comment that Bruce made is different. The way I understood it, not to impose a format when the information might already be available, So and again, I mean, even if the information would be available in all cases, what we're helping here is to have for users a set of information that provides a good application of the materiality principle. That's what we're doing. And as part of doing that, there is a cost saving associated.
Okay. Elizabeth, are we ready to go through the questions one by one?
I think so, Hans, yeah.
Okay.
Do you want me to, are
yes,
you going
please.
To shoot me? Okay, so question one on page 9 is about the IFRS, the investment entities exception. Does the board agree with staff recommendation that if it proposes a reduced disclosure IFRS standard, the standard should not include the disclosures required by 19DB and 19E to G of IFRS 12. Sorry, those in favour.
Okay. Can I see who supports the staff's recommendation?
I'm just going to count one more time because hands are coming up late. One, two. I'm counting six, Elizabeth. Is that?
Sorry. I made it.
No.
Sorry, seven. I see seven.
And so again,
again? Vote again?
No, again. Sorry, my apologies. Do we need to again if it's on four? I don't know. Sorry, my apologies. I don't know what the protocol is.
No, just in favor.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Sorry. Question two is the reconciliation. So does the board agree with the staff recommendation to provide, to require a reconciliation between the opening and closing balances in the statement of financial position for liabilities arising from financing activities? Those in favour?
Seven.
Okay. Thank you. Question three concerns the disclosures proposed in Appendix B of the paper. Does the board agree with the staff recommendation to include in the reduced disclosure standard the disclosure requirements recommended in Appendix B of the paper? Those in favour?
Nine.
Thank you. Question four. Question four is about Appendix C. So does the board agree with the staff recommendation in paragraph 3.5? Does the staff agree with the recommendations that are set out in the right-hand column in Appendix C? Those in favour?
Six. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. Can we try that again? No. I just caught. Is it six?
I think it was more. No?
Yeah, let's try that again.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Seven. Yep, seven.
Question five is about the IFRS 6 disclosure requirement. Does the board agree with the staff recommendation that subsidiaries that are SMEs should be required to make the disclosure in para 25 of IFRS 6? Those in favour?
Ten.
Question six should be about the maturity analysis. Forgive me. Yes. Question six is about the maturity analysis. So, does the board agree with the staff recommendation to require subsidiaries that are SMEs to give the information in paras 2013D and 1142 of the IFRS SMEs standard? And that you will consider whether to align disclosure requirements for all financial liabilities as part of your second comprehensive review. Those in favour?
Eleven.
Yeah. And question seven is about the reconciliation of present value of defined benefit obligation. So does the board agree with the staff recommendation to in paragraph 415 about the reconciliation? Those in favour?
Ten.
Yeah. So question 8 is about the disclosure objectives, but of course in the beginning I said could we leave that to the end. So I don't want to go straight to a vote. Do any of you want to make any comments about that before going to a vote? Okay.
May I?
Yeah.
Yes, Françoise.
Yes, I mean, it's been a difficult one, this one. And I think that on balance, I would be in favor of having the overarching disclosure objectives remain. And this, I mean, in the discussion we had last time, there were concerns that it should be clear that an entity would need to apply judgment and disclose whatever would be material and not be required in a detailed list. And, you know, I think an entity would know when they have something that is not in the list, but is very important in terms of revenue recognition. They would know if they have something very specific that is of interest to users in, around their employee benefits and the like. So I think it has the good reminder that and I think that's the same for everyone, including entities that apply the IFRS for SMEs. You follow the set of requirements, but if there is something that users need to know, you provide it. And I see the overarching disclosure objectives helping remind people that there may be something else than the detailed list.
Sue, did you also want to say something?
Yes please. So as everybody knows, I've got a bit of a complicated relationship with disclosure objectives. I agree with the staff's concern, if you like, about the risk that somebody might read the disclosure objectives and it might sort of undermine our objective of trying to be more constrained in terms of the disclosure requirements for this population. The only sort of worry I have, though, is I think disclosure objectives can be really helpful for good application of materiality, because it helps people understand what they should be thinking about when they decide how to approach the disclosures, how to think about disaggregation, etc., when they get to the requirements. And I would hate us to sort of, by excluding a disclosure objective, somehow be sending a message that for this population, we're more relaxed about them applying a more checklist-based approach than what we would in the, if they were applying the full IFRS. So if we can find a way to make sure that we're messaging to people that materiality still applies and they still need to approach these disclosures in a thoughtful way that doesn't use an objective, I'm okay with that, but I'm just a little bit... I'm not quite sure how we achieve that. So I guess I agree with your concern, but I do want to make sure we do something to be clear. We're not saying checklist is the way to go just because of the, it's a different population.
We could put something in the introduction to the standard or something to really clarify that.
Can, but of course you can't use the word materiality unless we're going to go out of kilter with our usual approach, which is not to say subject to materiality, because if we say it here, it implies something else elsewhere. So it's a little bit tricky, but yeah.
Bruce?
Thanks, Hans. I was going to suggest something like that. Is there not somewhere else we can put it? I mean, my only concern with it is if we have the same recognition and measurement criteria and we have the same disclosure objectives, I really think we're going to have a challenge telling people that certain disclosures aren't important. I would hate by default somebody looking at that and saying, well, if you really don't consider that important for those recognition and measurement and disclosure objectives, how do I apply that when I'm doing full IFRS? And I appreciate that you shouldn't be doing it that way around, but I think if you've got the same criteria, it's difficult not to. I was going to suggest something similar to Elizabeth said. I mean, is there any way we could try and put this into the concept section, the introduction, somewhere else where it's there? But I'd just be very loath to have the same, as I say, the same recognition and measurement and the same the same kind of disclosure objectives. Otherwise, I think we are going to end up with a bit of a challenge.
Mary?
At this time, at this stage of development of the disclosure initiative, I support the staff recommendations for this project. I think, though, that there's something that we have to think about the sustainability of our approach. If we end up moving in the down the road that the disclosure initiative provides proposes, because part of the objective of that project is to anchor things so strongly in compliance with the objective, and the list of specific items will become illustrative and maybe excessive, so that you can see you could do A or B. And I think we just have to, sooner rather than later, think about how we're going to keep these together if we go that route. It's an implication for this project rather than a reason not to do what the staff has proposed at this time. I think it works at this stage of development in full IFRS's of the disclosure initiative approach.
Okay. Are we ready to vote? Can I see who is in favor of the staff's recommendation? All right.
10.
Then Elizabeth, you want to move on?
Yes, if you're okay to do so now. So paper 21B deals with cut-off content of the consultation document and timing of proposals for subsequent amendments. So we propose that the consultation document includes, or has considered all standards issued at 1 January 21 and all exposure drafts published at that same date, apart from the general presentation and disclosure exposure draft, the reasons explained in the paper. And for the second part of the paper, we recommend publishing proposals to update the standard when an exposure draft of a new or amended standard is published. If that new or amended standard necessitates changes to reduce disclosure standard. So I've received some feedback that our second question, is a little too restricted. So it implies that if an exposure draft is published but has some disclosure requirements, we will automatically always want to propose changes to the standard, and that may not be so. In addition, it actually also implies that if a disclosure draft is published that doesn't affect disclosure, we wouldn't propose anything, and although that might be quite rare, there could be an instance when we want to. So I need just to ask you if we can slightly tweak that second question when we get there to say, do you agree that amendments to the reduced standard would be considered when an exposure draft of a new or amended standard is published? So I'll stop there and take your comments, if there are any.
Sue?
Thanks, Hans. I agree with what you are recommending in this paper for the reasons that you gave. I think it will make sense to try and sort of achieve a timing between changes that we are making in the IFRS standards as a whole and for the people applying the regime. Both for the reasons that you've given in the paper, but also I think it is probably pretty likely that if you've got a group which is applying full IFRS, they may want all of the entities in the group to sort of make any systems changes or anything they need along the way to capture information for disclosures at the same time. And by making proposing any amendments and implementing them in a way that would enable that process to be rolled out throughout the group sort of at the same time, even if the reduced disclosure regime has got a subset of the disclosures and the full requirements, I think proposing any changes at the same time that we're working on the full IFRS standards would make sense. And I think that would so I agree with your approach. And for me, this proposal, to the point that Francois made actually in the earlier discussions, shows for me why we do need to have a little bit of differences in timing, I think, inevitably, between what's going on with IFRS for SMEs, which is sort of by design a much more stop-start periodic review approach, and what we need to do here, given that we're talking about a population that have got a view towards consolidating up to full IFRS standards at a group level.
Okay. Mary?
I agree in principle. I have two kind of operational suggestions to make. One is, I think we should characterize it as we're going to trial doing it this way rather than committing in absolute black and white and look at it after a couple. And the second is, I agree with you in terms of when in the life cycle of an update to a full IFRS should we try and do the consideration of the disclosure implications for standard XX. So I think it's right to say at when there's an ED out rather than waiting till the final as we do with XBRL. But I think we should say at approximately the same time, because I don't want having us to end up having to scramble to get this done or holding up publication of something else. If we could say, you know, at approximately the same time, maybe on a lagging basis, so that there's an overlapping comment period, because I think first people have to get their heads around the changes that we're proposing for the full IFRS before they can think about the differential question. So those are two logistical aspects of your recommendation that I suggest you think about.
Thank you.
Okay, are we ready to vote on question one? Can I see who supports the staff's recommendation?
Thirteen.
Do we still need to discuss the second question, or
yes,
can we?
We can go straight to the vote, I believe.
Okay.
But it's the adapted question.
Can I see who supports staff's recommendation? Sorry. Okay, Elizabeth.
The final paper. So this paper deals with omitted topics and specialised activities. We don't anticipate there being many subsidiaries at SMEs that will wish to disclose earnings per share, will wish to prepare interims, but some might. So we've had to case of that. We've had to consider that. Para 3 of IAS 33 says, if an entity applying IFRS standards wants, that's not required to give ETS, not required to apply the standard, discloses ETS, it needs to apply IAS 33 to calculate that. The disclosure requirements in that standard are about the calculation. They're to inform a user about that. So the staff recommend if a subsidiary that's a SME chooses to disclose ETS, it should give all those disclosure requirements in IAS 33. For the interims, if we suggested the same approach, then a sub that's a SME would end up disclosing in its interim some information it wouldn't be required to disclose in its full annual. So for that reason, we are recommending putting adapted disclosure requirements in the reduced disclosure standard. And in response to a comment I received, I just want to confirm, para 7 of IAS 34 actually says there's nothing in IAS 34 that stops the company from producing a complete set of financial statements as its interims, and we won't be, that para will still be applicable. But anything that's in the reduced disclosure standard will be if a sub chooses to produce interims and produces to use condensed information. And then finally on that topic of interims, we've also received some feedback from board members. In the Appendix A, where we list the disclosure requirements of IAS 34 and what we do with them, paragraph 16F requires disclosures about dividends, and we propose not including that, and that it also be excluded from the full financial statements. But we've had some feedback on that. So I would like to additionally ask you to vote, in addition to the votes in the paper, when we get there, on whether you agree that dividends paid should be disclosed in interim and full financial statements if there's more than one class of share capital. And then finally, the final topic in the paper is IFRS 14 regulatory deferral accounts. And we're recommending we follow the same approach, but because the approach you took in the competitive review, we're just asking for you to vote on that. So I'll invite your comments before we vote on those topics.
Okay. Can I see if there are any comments or questions? No? Can we then go straight to the questions? Do we agree with the recommendation in question one? Can we go straight to question two? Mm-hmm. Yes. And then finally, yeah?
Well, I was going to say, can we just ask the extra question and before the final question? So do you agree that where a subsidiary's got more than one class of share capital, we should add in a disclosure requirement for it to disclose dividends paid in its interims and annual financial statements? So those in favour? And then the final question three, is on IFRS regulatory deferral accounts. Those in favour?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations. That was a long haul. A lot of praise has been expressed for the enormous amount of work that you did, and you brought it to a good end. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So let's take a break till 11:30.